Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
Welcome to All Ears, the official podcast of the Cedar Rapids Colonels, presented by Miracle Ear. I'm your host and voice of the Colonels, Calvin Cristoforo. On the podcast, you'll hear from past and present Cedar Rapids baseball influencers, including players, managers, executives, insiders, and more.
Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
Season 3, Episode 8 of the Colonels All Ear Podcast, presented to you, as always, by our friends over at Miracle Ear. Excited for a good episode here today. We welcome on the Minnesota Twins Director of Player Development, Drew McPhail, to the podcast. Drew, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, of course, Calvin. Happy to be on, man.
This is one of the busiest guys in baseball, the guys all around the map. So where do we have the pleasure of speaking to you? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, thankfully, I'm home in Minneapolis. We're sort of getting ready for the draft in about 9 days here. So thankfully, it serves as a little bit of a reset before getting a new draft class of guys in and sort of going from there and starting with the draft camp in Florida, then starting to travel all over again. So thankfully, a couple of weeks back at home.
Big draft coming up too. The Twins have a number 5 overall selection in the draft. But let's go back to what your title means, because it's a big, broad title. So I'm just curious, what is your duties? What is your typical day-to-day, and what do you do in this position with the Twins?
Yeah, totally. Definitely pretty broad. The way I view it is sort of help along with a team in the front office and, of course, our coaching staff of just basically overseeing our minor league players and their development. That's probably, you know, prerogative number one. A big part of that, I think, in my role is also sort of helping oversee our coaching staff and trying to bring in, develop the best coaches possible, since they're ultimately the ones that are going to be impacting the players the most on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, ultimately the job is trying to develop players and prepare them to basically optimize their talent as baseball players and hopefully make an impact in major league club. So that's like a very broad overview of how I view my job. But I think like the biggest way I can make a personal impact in that is by hiring the best possible staff and sort of providing that staff with the best resources we in the front office possibly can, so that they can ultimately do their jobs at a high level.
So you're home in Minneapolis, but we've seen you in Cedar Rapids. I know you've been down to Fort Myers. You bounce around from affiliate to affiliate. Mm-hmm. When you come to Cedar Rapids or, you know, St. Paul or Wichita, that is, what is your goal there when you make an appearance on site?
Yeah, to be honest, it sort of fluctuates and changes sort of given where the club is at and the roster composition of the club. I think a couple constants are, one, just to check in, build relationships with the players and build relationship with the staff members that are impacting the players. That sort of never changes. But usually there are a few targeted things that I want to accomplish when I'm coming into Cedar Rapids, and that'll depend on sort of the personnel and where players are at. So if it's pushing a specific goal with a player, that'll kind of be like my prerogative, depending on sort of where they're at in their development.
So I want to start by going back a little bit now to how you got into this position. Mm-hmm. You come from, of course, a baseball family. You got a couple of Hall of Famers in your family. Your dad is, you know, a big time executive. What was it like just growing up in that household around the sport of baseball?
Yeah, it was awesome. I was incredibly lucky to grow up in baseball from an early age. Ever since I can remember, probably when I was like 5 years old, I was going to a ballpark with my dad, my older brother, who works in the commissioner's office for MLB. So from a very early age, all I can remember is baseball. And I think from a very early age, I knew that was, you know, a career path I wanted to get into, and learned a lot of valuable lessons from just having a dad, you know, that was fortunate enough to be an executive, not only for the Minnesota Twins, but the Chicago Cubs, the Baltimore Orioles, the Philadelphia Phillies. So he was able to give me a lot of perspective as I kind of broke into the game.
So what is a couple of your favorite memories just from growing up and going to the ballpark?
I was born in Minneapolis, but don't remember it. My dad took a job with the Cubs when I was very little. So some of my favorite memories are just with the Chicago Cubs kind of growing up. So I think Sammy Sosa and the Mark McGwire home run race, I remember that kind of being like one of my big first memories of like really getting into following a team and following the Sosa home run race. So that's like one of my favorite ones when I look back as a kid, of just going to the park every day with like a Sosa jersey and just hoping to get hit another home run. So that would probably be the one that sticks out for me the most.
How often were you able to get to some of these games? Is it like when the team was at home, you went often, or how often did you go to the team's games?
Yeah, if you asked my dad, probably too often, really, like whenever my brother and I were off, and especially during the summer, would always want to go with him to the park. I think there were times we'd try to sneak out before we woke up, just so he didn't have to drag us to work again. But I remember spending like a ton of my summers, you know, in Wrigleyville, and then in high school when my dad was working for the Orioles in Baltimore as well. So really as much as my brother and I could.
We had John and Wilson on with his dad, the Wilsons, a couple of episodes ago. He's obviously a scout for the team, and then Johnny's a pitcher here for the Colonels. And they were talking about how they would go to ballparks together growing up, the whole shebang. But they were going to, you know, the minor league parks with John being a scout, and you're going to Wrigley and Camden Yards and Citizens Bank, stuff like that. So that must have been an absolute whirlwind for you, getting to embrace that baseball culture at a very, very young age.
Yeah, totally. I think as I got older, what really interested me was obviously like I love the game, so that was a huge part of it. And then I think understanding as I grew up, sort of what that front office role looked like, it was just an intersection of a lot of my interests. I majored in economics, had basically a minor in mathematics, and reading Moneyball, like those were all big influences on me, and sort of something that I always knew I wanted to work in baseball, but as I got a little bit more mature, I felt like it intersected with a lot of my interests in school as well. So yeah, really since I could remember, just for a love of the game perspective, and then as I got a little bit more interested in school, seeing how sort of working in a front office would intersect with some of my interests in that arena, you know, trying to work in baseball felt like definitely something I wanted to pursue.
Was there a specific moment in that timeline where it clicked and said, okay, I know I want to work in baseball, but now I kind of want to go down this path rather than this path? Because as you know, in baseball, there's a lot of different ways you can find yourself in the game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think from an early age, my dad would take me on a lot of the minor league road trips he'd go on. So I remember kind of coming up in the player development, you know, arena through just driving to like Lansing or seeing the Iowa Cubs. So I think that was one like very early start. And then really when I got my first internship with the Cincinnati Reds for a summer between my junior and senior year of college, as I sort of just got accustomed to what working in a front office looked like, I started to be drawn to the player development realm. And I think that after that first internship, kind of getting my feet wet, that's when I realized that, you know, ultimately player development was a department that I thought I would have a lot of interest in working in and I could impact as well. So that was sort of, I think, the moment it clicked that, you know, I'd always knew I wanted to work in baseball, but then specifically working in player development was going to be the route that I wanted to go down.
So you took that internship with the Reds, then you graduated, and then it's out to Los Angeles. You worked a little bit with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Were you in LA, and what did you learn with the Dodgers?
Yeah, it was awesome. So I actually, the real connection to the Minnesota Twins for me to ultimately get this job was working with Jeremy Zoll, who is now our assistant general manager with the Minnesota Twins. At the time, he had just taken a player development role with the Dodgers, and they were looking for someone to work in PD, round out their sort of PD front office when Andrew Friedman and that sort of new regime came to work for the Dodgers. And Jeremy Zoll had interned with the Cincinnati Reds as well, and he had a good relationship with their front office over there. I went to school in California, and the Cincinnati Reds group was incredibly fortunate enough and nice enough to know that I loved living in California and I wanted to work in PD specifically. So they thought that might be a good fit, and they let me interview. So that was kind of my connection ultimately to work for the Dodgers, and now ultimately with the Twins. The Dodgers experience was incredible. It was really the first time I got exposed to working in a player development department. Of course, I think it's no secret that they do player development, you know, at a really efficient clip, and have had a lot of successes kind of come through their ranks. So I think it just gave me like a fantastic perspective on what good looks like. And then of course, coming to the Minnesota Twins, another highly regarded and respected front office, especially in you know, the player development realm, I think it's just rounded out my perspective on ultimately what good looks like, what you know, an important standard to keep is, and that sort of ultimately helped impact my own beliefs about player development.
And correct me if I'm wrong, were you there when the Dodgers won the World Series in 2020?
I was not. Maybe I was the reason why they finally pushed them over the hump, me leaving. But I left at the end of the 2019 season, kind of actually going right into the 2020 pandemic year. So 2020 was my first season with the Twins and coincidentally when the Dodgers finally won the World Series. So maybe there's a common denominator there.
And the Dodgers, like you mentioned, has had a lot of success at a bunch of levels. You even look in the Midwest League this year, the Great Lakes Loons, best overall record in the league. They're the first half champs in the Midwest League East Division. So what lessons did you learn, you know, with the Dodgers on how do they run a franchise? Because it seems like every year, not only are they a top major league roster, but it seems like all their minor league teams are loaded top to bottom, and they can pretty much pull up any prospect they want to fit a hole in their big league roster.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. There are a ton of things. I think maybe the biggest one that might sound simple is, and learned this from Jeremy Zoll, who was working with the Dodgers at the time and sort of helped bring to Minnesota as well, is just the creating a framework of how you evaluate performance of what a major league trajectory looks like, and then how you apply that to individual players. And that's much easier said than done. And a huge part of that is in educating the staff and the players on what those performance indicators are and how we're going to go about training them to improve them. And that's sort of like a framework, I think, that was implemented in LA and has been implemented here that has led to a ton of organizational success. And of course, with that has led to a ton of individual player success of really just trying to find what's the lowest hanging fruit that we can improve on and work on and consistently work on day in, day out. And if we improve at that skill, that's to give us the best chance to not only, you know, make the major leagues, but be a productive big leaguer for a long time and make an impact to the major league level.
Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
Hearing is important to living life to the fullest. That's why inside every Miracle-Ear store, you'll find better laughs at family barbecues. You'll find a better life is in store at Miracle-Ear when you experience the Miracle-Ear exclusive advantage. It starts with our free hearing assessment, plus innovative products that will fit your needs and budget. With free service and adjustments for life, call 319-243-7105 to schedule a free hearing evaluation and find a better life in store. Our local Miracle-Ear team is proud to support the Cedar Rapids Colonels.
Group outings are a great way to unwind and enjoy a night out, and we invite you to reach out to our group sales staff and see all the options we have.
Everybody knows when you're at the game, the good times roll.
Hey, hey, Colonels, let the good times roll. Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
Calvin Christopher and Drew McPhail, the Colonels All Ear Podcast, Season 3, Episode 8, presented to you, as always, by Miracle-Ear. And people look at your position and they probably think, okay, players, players, players. But the thing you keep mentioning is the coaches and how pivotal they are to the success of growing these players. How do you go about picking a minor league coaching staff to produce a roster that will have success going down the line in their major league career?
Yeah, you want to get that's a great question. I think you really want to take and find the biggest candidate pool you possibly can and feel really good about the questions that you ask in your interview process, you know, asking around for references of coaches that you feel like do a really good job that are constant learners and asking them which coaches they think are really good. And we try to exhaust every single possible avenue, whether that's asking coaches in our current system who they think are good, scouring Twitter, just kind of cold emailing programs that we think have done a really good job collegially or even in like the high school realm. Like really, I think it starts with building out a fantastic candidate pool and spending a ton of time there. And then also sort of having an idea of the attributes that you're looking for that you think ultimately make really good coaches. And I think a big piece of that is, you know, basic things that wouldn't sound like they're groundbreaking, but are ultimately the things that are really important, like a great sense of work ethic, open-mindedness, like a desire to learn and get better, and a huge care factor for the player. I think like those are sort of like four core tenets that we're looking for in our coaching staff. And then we're trying to cast as wide a net as we possibly can and spending a ton of time on the interview process. It is not the most fun part of the job, if I'm being completely honest. But I really do believe it's like one of the most critical. And so we spend a ton of time trying to find out who's good in the coaching realm. And it really doesn't matter if that's in the private sector, high school baseball, college baseball, whatever it is, like we're going to try to find the best coaching candidates available.
So how long is that process? I assume it happens sometime in the off season.
Yeah, really. I think it happens, you know, 365 days a year, where the off season is sort of when we, I think, put in the most work of actually reaching out to these candidates. It's sort of when the cycle comes if we have openings. But even right now, you know, we're looking for coaching staff candidates. We're working on the education piece and always trying to build a candidate pool and ask around. So really, I think like that's one way it's changed in the past, you know, a few years, is we're sort of always constantly on the look for people that we think are right upcoming coaches in this game.
That's really interesting. You say how that net is so wide, because you look at the Colonels coaching staff with Corbin Day and Jonas Love and a couple of guys that came from college baseball. So You, like you said, that net has been cast very wide, and both of them have added a lot to this Colonels staff. One last thing in the coaching staff, I'm just generally curious on, when you hire a coach, how do you know what level to send them out to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I think we usually try to get an idea of just sort of personality fit, obviously kind of familial considerations of what they might be open to, what might, you know, depending on the composition of the rest of the staff and how it's rounding out. That's sort of what we look at first, of where our current staff might end up at which affiliates, and then get an idea of what those openings that we might have are. For example, you know, Corbin was previously a hitting coach at Kirkwood Community College, and that's right across the street from Cedar Rapids. So that felt like a pretty natural fit. But a lot of times I think it comes down to just getting an idea of what, you know, that projected roster might look like in the following season, and the potential needs there, how that person might complement the rest of the staff from a personality perspective. And it just kind of always feels like one big puzzle every single offseason that you're trying to, you know, make the pieces fit as best as you possibly can.
Stay connected with the Cedar Rapids Colonels all year long by following the Colonels on social media. Catch up with the Colonels on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CR Colonel.
Calvin Christopher, Drew McPhail talking on the Colonels All Year podcast. This is season 3, episode 8, presented by Miracle Ear. And now we're talking coaching roster. Now we'll go to the roster, because this Cedar Rapids team has had a lot of success in the early season. Obviously the first half champs in the Midwest League West. How did you kind of know and put together this specific group of guys to come to Cedar Rapids? Obviously it's a bunch of timing, but how does it go about where in the offseason you know this guy's ready for high A, and maybe not ready for double A yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it goes back to getting an idea of their previous season performance, sort of their age and what might be appropriate kind of based off, you know, performance and age for level. There are some, you know, indicators that give us a pretty good idea of that, their performance in low A, and just sort of where they're on that scale. I think the really cool thing about this year so far is we knew it was going to be an incredibly talented group in Cedar Rapids, but we knew it was also going to be a really young group. And we probably pushed a lot of guys and like pretty aggressively, just given their age, like probably, you know, significantly below the average age of a high A player. But we felt like they were talented enough and mature enough to handle the assignment. And so I think we knew that it was a really talented group and we're excited about the roster, but we weren't 100% sure of, you know, how they might perform in terms of wins and losses as a team. And what's been really cool is, I think this is a testament to, you know, Brian Dinkelman and the rest of the Cedar Rapids staff. What's been really cool is we've sort of had the luxury of both. Like players make really big developmental strides, be able to handle the level, which ultimately, you know, is really exciting for us with that sort of longer term perspective. But then that's also translated into a ton of winning, which if you had asked me in the beginning of the year, I'm not sure I would have guessed. They would have had such a good first half. I would have guessed that maybe success would have come in the second half and we could have snuck in the playoffs that way, but it's been sort of the best of both worlds. So it's been an awesome place to travel to and follow along.
And obviously though, in your position, those best of both worlds always don't come together. So how much, I mean, obviously at the end of the day, this is all player development, right? But how much do you weigh player development versus wins and losses? Like I'd imagine it's like an 80-20 or 90-10 look at that angle.
It's a huge piece. I'd say they coincide. If you're focused individually on getting better every single day and the things that you can control and being a good teammate, like I think that leads to winning. So we talk about that a lot. Yes, we're developmentally focused first and foremost, but I think like good development leads to winning. And ultimately that's what we care about, right? The big league team and their win loss record and making the playoffs and ultimately competing for a World Series. So we try to stress, we don't want to lose sight of that. Of course, we want to be performance driven and we want to be developmentally driven, but I think that ultimately is in the pursuit of winning games. And I think you see that, you know, if you don't have like that winning culture where you value that, like, I think that can be problematic in a lot of respects. So we try to sort of view them as, you know, not separate or a weight on one versus the other. I think we, you know, ultimately and ideally try to weigh them as one and the same.
Another question I'm just really generally curious about is how do you know when a guy is ready for the next level to go up? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you look at the success and levels he's at now, and I'm sure the age and the experience plays a factor, but is there anything I'm missing? How do you know when the guy is ready to move up from whether it's Fort Myers to Cedar Rapids, from Cedar Rapids to Wichita, Wichita to St. Paul, or even St. Paul to the Twins?
Yeah, totally. So I think there are a ton of factors that go into it. One, I think we also, you know, want to lean on the staff, sort of how they feel like if the player is handling the level, if they're mature enough for that next step, and if they're going about their work in a professional manner, like those are all really good signs. Kind of what I talked about a little bit earlier, which is some of those performance standards, like ultimately the performance is going to be king to get an idea. If we feel like you've proven that you could handle the challenge of high A, and not only are you handling it, but you're excelling. And you're one of the better offensive performers, one of the better, pitching performers. Like that's going to be ultimately, I think, one of the king pieces of letting us know that you're ready for the next challenge. And I think like one thing that doesn't always get considered maybe from the outside is then what that roster looks like at that next level. So for example, you know, for a high A promotion, what does the double A roster look like? And it's easy just to, you know, promote a player and, you know, kind of be like, oh, we did it and we're done. But you want that player to then, if they're worthy of the promotion, you're really excited about their development, then you want them to step into an opportunity that they're going to excel in double A and they're going to get a lot of playing time. So if you have, you know, three players that are playing extremely well in double A, maybe in the outfield, let's say, and none of those guys are quite ready for triple A yet, though, given the triple A roster, then it might not make as much sense to promote a player in the Cedar Rapids outfield that's performing. But if they go up to double A, they're not going to be playing as much. Like we view, you know, to your point of the minor leagues, ultimately, they're sort of all developmental leagues to lead to the major leagues. At some point, like I'd take a player sticking in high A and just playing every single day versus just sort of, you know, arbitrarily promoting them because we feel like they should just go to double A and they're ready, but they might not have as much playing time. So I think it's like a little bit of like a tricky seesaw there, but ultimately we're going to lean on performance to tell us if the player is ready. And then also our staff, we're going to trust them of whether or not we feel like they feel like the player is ready to handle that next challenge.
Something that sparked my interest when you were talking there is when a player does get promoted, how important is it that the clubhouses from single A up have the same, you know, in clubhouse mojo, the same protocols, the same procedures. So everything's consistent. So you're not going from, you know, one different clubhouse mindset to another. How important is it to have everyone on the same page there and come together and know that it's a seamless transition regardless of what level you go to?
Yeah, I think that's sort of two separate questions. So I think that's like a big piece of like how we kind of view player development of we want the things that we value, the things that are important to us, the indicators that we look at and that sort of help players along on developmental trajectory to the big leagues, that those things are the same. So I think that's kind of the piece of like a cohesive staff and, you know, the operation in high A looks very similar to the operation in double A and that we have like fantastic communication between both staffs and as a front office. So that's like a really important piece from my seat of how we view that and try to help that transition. And then of course, if a player gets promoted from high A to double A that, you know, we're all communicating as a staff and the things that they're working on and how to continue those, you know, things that we're attacking, those routines in double A. So that's, I think, like part of my job of creating that cohesion and synergy throughout the affiliates and something that we feel like is incredibly important. So that'd be the first piece on kind of the staff and sort of PD front office perspective. I think the second piece, more from like a player perspective on that mojo and that the kind of clubhouse vibe is similar. I think like a lot of that is we try to stress to our players to control the things that they can control. So, you know, of course there are times when I think players might be frustrated about their lack of promotion or when's that going to happen. And like, we first and foremost, welcome that of like an open dialogue of we want the player to, you know, care and we want them to be invested in their career and ask those questions and feel empowered to do so. We also want to stress like ultimately those things are out of your control, and the best thing for, you know, a clubhouse cohesion and like kind of individual like mental health is like focusing on the things that you can control and attacking those day in, day out. So we really try to stress that with our group as well.
Wrapping up here on the Colonel Zellier podcast, Calvin Cristoforo, so happy to be joined by Drew McPhail, part of the Twins player development front office realm of the Minnesota Twins and the Colonels organization. Drew, I want to ask you just a couple of quick questions as the draft is coming up. We kind of started with that piece. I promised we'd go back to it. What does this draft process, if you can give it to me in the simplest terms, look like for you as you're trying to go through and scout these young guys?
Yeah, so I'm incredibly fortunate. Our group's incredibly fortunate to be included in some of the evaluation process from our amateur scouting director, Sean Johnson, and his group. That's, I think, very rare and sort of a testament to the collaboration and the cohesion between the amateur scouting department here with the Minnesota Twins, the player development department, the R&D department, performance science department. There's a ton of collaboration that goes into the draft, which, you know, I think is rare and also something that's like truly special here. So we do get to be a part of some of the evaluations of, you know, the top, you know, 1,500 guys and kind of people that might be potential targets for us in the draft throughout the first, you know, 10 rounds or so. But ultimately, like, I view my job as trying to work and help develop and help optimize whichever player that we end up selecting and try to take myself out of it. I'm so focused on the development of the players that we have in our system that it's hard to then spend the time and have the context that you need to be intimately involved in the draft. So if asked, I give my opinion and I try to help that group, but I also understand that it's, you know, one of the hardest jobs in baseball. And my job is, you know, not to select the players, it's to help them, you know, onboard them when they get to the system and help work with them and help their, you know, them achieve their dreams of becoming Major League Baseball players. So these next couple of weeks, they're very time intensive. A lot of awesome discussion that goes into it and preparation for different scenarios as we kind of get to that draft day or days. But I am more concerned of once we get those 20 plus players, you know, getting them to the complex in Fort Myers, introducing them to our staff, doing a ton of education onboarding about the things that we value, the resources we have available to them, and, you know, kind of helping them throughout their entire career. I tend to be more focused on the weeks after the draft than really, you know, the weeks leading up to it.
So just a quick question on the weeks after, because last season, the Colonels fans got to see Brooks Lee right after he was drafted. Of course, now one of the top prospects, if not the top prospect in the Twin system. How do you know that a guy is ready to pretty much essentially jump the entire single A level in Fort Myers and come to Cedar Rapids? Obviously, Brooks, a college guy who had a lot of college experience playing for his dad at Cal Poly. How do you know that a guy like him was ready? And how do you know that even draft picks coming out of college are ready to go right to high A?
Yeah, no, great question. I think a huge part of it you sort of touched on in Calvin is sort of, are they a high school draftee? Are they drafted out of college? What do their numbers look like? How mature do we think they are? Are they ready for the assignment? All those pieces kind of go into it. And then, of course, going back to like that King one, which is ultimately just performance. You know, Brooks drafted 8th overall. Had an incredible college career, really controlled the zone well, and thought he was an incredibly polished player and would be ready for high A. I think if you look at where the players at in terms of their age and then what level they played in college and then what their result stats were, that's going to tell us a lot right there. So, for example, if we draft a college player from one of the top college programs or conferences, like, I think we can be pretty confident, especially if it's sort of, you know, essentially with that 5th overall pick, that they're probably ready to handle the competition level in high A. Now, if we draft a potential high school player, that's a teenager and hasn't had that college performance, that's a bigger jump, right? So we might not feel like that's appropriate prescription of challenge level for a teenager, whereas maybe a college performer drafted in the first round that has had a really impressive track record of college success, we're going to feel more confident letting them skip low A. So it usually just kind of comes down to the age, the performance level, and when the player comes in, kind of, you know, if we feel like they're polished enough and ready to handle that type of challenge.
And we'll just wrap up with this question. Draft coming up could be really interesting. But the back half of the Cedar Rapids season is very exciting and very interesting for the fans in Cedar Rapids, an organization that hasn't had a championship since 1994. All the season ticket holders, all the host families, the front office know that. So what should those guys expect to see from the Colonels in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think what everyone can expect is we're going to have an incredibly talented roster, and hopefully we're going to be in a position where we can finally win the Midwest League Championship. It's one of the first things that Dink joked with me, our former farm director, Alex Hassan, and of course, Jeremy Zoll, who was in the farm director seat before that, when we started the year, that we had, you know, a 10-plus year playoff stretch. And you know, they basically just joked with me, like, got to make sure you make the playoffs as a little bit of pressure. And now, you know, the pressure is got to finally win a championship for Cedar Rapids. And hopefully I get the last lap there with our former farm directors that could finally help out and, have the squad that finally does it. So I think, like, in terms of what to expect, you know, there's always a lot of moving parts of the roster, but I think the fans can expect a really talented group, and hopefully some supplemented players from the draft, and hopefully guys ready to compete and win a championship finally in Cedar Rapids.
Well, there you go. From the top down, the Colonels are going for it this season in 2023. That's Hugh McPhail, the Director of Player Development for the Minnesota Twins. Drew, I can't thank you enough for your time.
Of course, Calvin. Appreciate it, man.
That was Season 3, Episode 8 of the Colonels All Air Podcast. Stay tuned for Season 3, Episode 9.
Choosing Miracle-Ear was a great decision. Like when I decided to host family movie nights. Miracle-Ear made it easy. I just booked an appointment and a certified hearing care professional evaluated my hearing loss and helped me find the right device calibrated to my unique hearing needs. Now I enjoy every moment, the quiet ones and the loud ones.
Your local Miracle-Ear team is proud to support your Cedar Rapids Colonels. Enjoy the game.